In a world increasingly defined by too much, Kim Jong-Pain offers a revolutionary yet intuitive approach to raising children. Simplicity parenting has become a touchstone for parents seeking to reclaim childhood from the relentless pressures of modern life. The book has garnered praise from celebrities like Gwyneth Paltrow and Oprah Winfrey, who have highlighted its practical wisdom on their platforms. Since its publication, the Simplicity Parenting movement has grown into a global phenomenon with training programs in over 12 countries and thousands of certified coaches. What makes this approach so compelling? Perhaps it's the recognition that our children are drowning in stuff, choices, information, and speed, and that there's a clearer path forward that aligns with what children truly need. The genesis of Pain's simplification approach emerged from an unexpected revelation. After working with traumatized children in refugee camps in Jakarta, where he witnessed the devastating effects of war and displacement, he later found himself treating middle-class Western children in affluent neighborhoods with eerily similar symptoms: anxiety, sleep problems, controlling behaviors, and explosive emotions. The stunning realization was that his treatment plans for these ordinary children matched those he developed for refugee children suffering from PTSD. These parallels weren't superficial. They extended to specific behavioral patterns, emotional regulation issues, and even physical manifestations of stress. These typical children were exhibiting what Pain calls cumulative stress reaction, similar to complex post-traumatic stress disorder, but resulting from constant small stresses that never fully dissipate. Unlike normal childhood stresses like scraped knees or playground arguments that build resilience, these children were suffering from what he terms the undeclared war on childhood, where adult concerns flood unchecked into children's lives. This manifests in various ways: exposure to adult conversations about finances and global crises, constant access to news and media, and pressure to achieve at increasingly younger ages. The culprits? Four pillars of too much that Pain identified through extensive clinical observation. Too much stuff cluttering their physical and mental spaces, from overflowing toy boxes to walls plastered with educational materials. Too many choices overwhelming their developing decision-making abilities, from what to wear to which activities to pursue. Too much information flooding in before they have the context to process it, including exposure to complex global issues and adult concerns. And too fast a pace, preventing the slow, essential unfolding of childhood development, with packed schedules leaving little time for free play and natural development. When Pain began implementing simplification protocols with these children, the approach was comprehensive and systematic. He worked with families to reduce their environments, screen time, schedules, and information intake by half. This meant concrete changes: removing excess toys, establishing media-free times, creating predictable daily rhythms, and protecting children from adult conversations and concerns. The results were remarkable. In a 5-year study of 55 challenging children from 32 Waldorf schools, 68% went from clinically dysfunctional to functional within just 4 months, with no drugs involved. Their academic and cognitive abilities increased by 36.8%, directly challenging the fixed brain chemistry model that has led to America consuming 80% of the world's Ritalin. The improvements were noted across multiple areas: better sleep patterns, reduced anxiety, improved concentration, and more cooperative behavior. These findings suggest that by modifying children's environments through accessible lifestyle changes, we can enhance their attention capabilities and overall well-being. While medications have their place as temporary scaffolding for severe cases, simplification offers a sustainable approach that honors children's innate developmental needs. This approach acknowledges that childhood itself is a crucial developmental stage that requires protection and nurturing, not acceleration or adult-level complexity. Just as we recognize physical illness through touch and observation, children experience what Pain calls soul fevers, emotional states where they're overwhelmed and at odds with their truest selves. These manifest uniquely in each child, but share common patterns. Children amplify their natural tendencies during these periods. introverted children withdraw further while still sniping at others, extroverted children express discomfort through anger or blame. A typically quiet child might become almost mute, while an outgoing child might become uncharacteristically aggressive or confrontational. Young children become hypersensitive during soul fevers, with deeper tantrums, altered sleep patterns, and hair trigger emotional responses. A minor disappointment might trigger an hour-long meltdown, or a small change in routine could cause extreme anxiety. Physical symptoms often accompany these states: stomach aches, headaches, or changes in appetite. Older children may shift friendships or work habits, suddenly avoiding longtime friends or losing interest in favorite activities. Teenagers get stuck in developmental extremes without the adult stability they need as counterbalance, often manifesting in risk-taking behavior, extreme mood swings, or complete withdrawal from family life. When we notice these signs, the response parallels how we treat physical illness, stop normal routines, and create space for recovery. Most children can reset their emotional equilibrium with just 2 or 3 quiet days of downtime. This period should feel different from everyday life, filled with simple pleasures they rarely have time for: painting, family stories, building projects, or one-on-one time with parents. Activities might include baking cookies together, reading favorite books from early childhood, or engaging in calm, repetitive activities like knitting or drawing. Nature provides particularly powerful healing for overwhelmed children. Studies show even hospital patients with tree views recover faster. And neurologically, nature shifts children from fight or flight responses to higher creative and cognitive functions. Simple activities like cloud watching, collecting leaves, or sitting by a stream can have profound calming effects. Even urban families can benefit from tending to houseplants, watching birds at a feeder, or visiting a local park. Like a physical fever, a soul fever has its own lifespan that can't be controlled or bypassed. Parents might notice phases. First, the buildup of tension, then the peak of emotional distress, followed by a gradual return to balance. By simplifying during these times, we're not trying to stop the process, but supporting our child through it, creating a loving container for them to process their feelings. This might mean canceling activities, limiting screen time, or saying no to social engagements. We recognize recovery when our child's brightness and ease return. They emerge stronger and more resilient after emotional storms, having learned the valuable lesson that things get better. The experience also builds trust between parent and child, showing that parents understand and respond to their emotional needs as well as their physical ones. The threshold to a child's room often reveals an otherworldly space with items piled everywhere, walls plastered with posters, and toys layered like archaeological strata. This excess isn't just oppressive, but potentially harmful, leading to fragmentation, overload, and entitlement. The change has been dramatic, even within 1 or 2 generations. Today's average American child receives 70 toys annually, making toys everyday items rather than special occasion gifts. When simplifying, parents should imagine all their children's toys gathered into one mountain, then reduce dramatically, halved, then halved again, and perhaps again. While we're told that toys develop imagination, implying more toys mean more creativity, this reasoning has been manipulated by advertisers who suggest children have no inner life without commercial products. In reality, too many toys actually derail a child's natural focus and attention span. The key principle in simplifying is asking whether toys allow imagination or are too fixed, already detailed and limited to specific functions. Fixed toys like Barbie often get damaged because they invite less emotional investment than simpler toys that can be transformed through play. Architect Simon Nicholson's theory of loose parts explains that creativity relates to movable, transformable elements in an environment. When evaluating which toys to keep, use a checklist. Remove broken toys unless truly beloved. Eliminate developmentally inappropriate items. Discard conceptually fixed toys, like plastic movie characters. Remove toys that do too much mechanically. Eliminate high-stimulation toys with flashing lights and sounds. Discard annoying or offensive toys. Remove toys marketed to give children a developmental edge, eliminate toys purchased due to pressure rather than genuine value, discard toys acquired through pester power, and remove toy multiples that dilute special connections. After clearing the excess, organize thoughtfully. Store some toys in a lending library system, where one toy must be put away for each new one that enters rotation. Keep a small number of beloved toys visible while storing others accessibly in covered baskets or bins to reduce visual clutter. The guideline should be, how many toys can your child put away independently in 5 minutes? Children need sensory experiences with natural materials, real tools that provide genuine involvement, and make-believe play that develops critical cognitive skills. Simple props offer more imaginative flexibility than elaborate ones. Most importantly, children need experiences, not entertainment. Exploring their environments, engaging with the four elements, and developing purpose through meaningful activities alongside adults. Life today is characterized more by randomness than rhythm. With both parents typically working outside the home, family life often consists of whatever time and energy remain after the workday ends. Most families can't describe a typical day because there isn't one. Yet children crave rhythm, beginning with their mother's heartbeat in the womb. Through predictable patterns, children learn that things disappear and reappear, building their sense of security. When rhythm seems impossible, increasing predictability can provide children security. Take Justin, a 6-year-old who refused to get out of bed, mounting what Payne called the pajama defense. His parents, both pharmaceutical salespeople with erratic schedules, created an unpredictable life where Justin never knew who would take him to school or pick him up. Rather than attempting full rhythm, they focused on transparency, giving Justin access to the picture of his day through nightly previews, creating visual markers he could count on. Rhythm calms and secures children, grounding them in the family earth so they can branch out and grow. It establishes gentle parental authority. "This is what we do," communicates order and safety. For parents, rhythm reduces the need for constant discipline and verbal direction. Start small, creating islands of consistency in your daily chaos. Begin with your children's flashpoints, like transitions, and work from there. These rhythms build what Payne calls relational credits, a connection that sustains through difficult times, particularly adolescence. The bond doesn't require special, sacred spaces. A father's workshop or an ordinary dinner table works perfectly. What matters is creating space in your time and attention, being available when children need to talk. These relationships are forged in pauses, the ordinary moments with extraordinary cumulative power. Family dinner represents more than just a meal. It's a powerful ritual that studies show correlates with better academic performance, healthier eating habits, and reduced risk of depression and substance abuse. The magic lies in the process, not just the food itself. When children help make food, they develop ownership and are less likely to reject it. Making "what's for dinner" an obsolete question simplifies family meals tremendously. Establish a weekly rotation, Monday pasta night, Tuesday rice night, Wednesday soup, to create predictability that grounds children while making meal planning easier for parents. Far from being boring, these rhythms act as buoys rather than anchors in the currents of daily life. The journey towards sleep begins not at bedtime, but when a child wakes up. Children who struggle with bedtime often need more pressure valves throughout their day, rhythmic moments that allow them to release emotional steam and process experiences. These can include morning movement activities, midday quiet time, afternoon outdoor play, or evening wind-down rituals. Each serves as a crucial checkpoint for emotional regulation and energy release. These pressure valves provide security and connection while helping children let go into sleep, which requires deep trust. For school-aged children, a bedtime ritual like Sue's grit sandwich with her son Henry works beautifully. Asking about the day's highlights, challenges, and previewing tomorrow creates a safe space to unpack worries and excitement. This might involve questions like, "What made you smile today?" or "What was tricky to handle?" followed by gentle discussion about tomorrow's activities. Sleep itself is the ultimate rhythm, affecting everything from behavior to neural development and emotional regulation. Most children between 2 and 6 need 11 hours nightly, with adolescents requiring 8 to 10 hours, despite typically getting much less. Research shows that each hour of missed sleep can reduce attention span by up to 25% and increase emotional volatility. Consistent bedtimes within a 20-minute window should be among a family's most inviolable rhythms, even on weekends and holidays. Stories serve as powerful pressure valves at day's end, allowing children's daily experiences and questions to find expression through adventures in mythical realms. Whether through picture books, chapter books, or oral storytelling, these narrative moments create a bridge between the day's activities and nighttime rest. As children identify with characters' fears, bravery, and compassion, they process their own emotions while releasing the day's tensions. A child afraid of starting school might find comfort in a story about a nervous rabbit's first day, while one struggling with friendship could relate to tales of woodland creatures learning to work together. The musicality and rhythm of language in stories creates a relaxing experience where nothing is required of children except to listen and imagine. Traditional tales often incorporate repetitive phrases and rhythmic patterns that help calm the nervous system. Through stories, children learn about possibilities beyond their immediate world while developing wells of empathy and compassion. They encounter different perspectives, cultures, and ways of solving problems. Einstein's advice to read fairy tales if you want your children to be intelligent speaks to how these archetypal narratives contain essential life lessons about truth, beauty, goodness, struggles, and second chances. From Little Red Riding Hood teaching awareness to The Ugly Duckling exploring self-acceptance, these timeless tales offer wisdom that resonates across generations. Creating a consistent storytelling environment, perhaps in a cozy corner with soft lighting and comfortable cushions, further reinforces the bedtime rhythm and signals to the child's body and mind that it's time to transition toward sleep. Our modern approach to childhood has become increasingly structured and scheduled, with children having as much as 12 hours less free time per week than a generation ago. School-age children now spend more time in structured activities, doubled from 11% to over 20%, homework has increased dramatically, and overall free time has decreased from 40% to 25% of a child's day since 1981. Just as farmers discovered chemical fertilizers in the 1950s that allowed them to control and increase productivity through monoculture crops, modern parents have applied the same industrial thinking to childhood. We've enriched our children's lives with constant activities, creating superphosphated lives that are ultimately unsustainable. Like crop rotation in sustainable farming, childhood requires balance between three essential elements: the fallow field of leisure and rest, downtime, the legume crop of deep creative play when children lose themselves in flow, and the crop field of structured activities. Without this balance, children become depleted like over-farmed soil. Boredom is not a problem to solve, but a gift, the precursor to creativity. When children claim they're bored, they're crossing the bridge from doing nothing to deep creative play. In our role as parents, we've become accustomed to being entertainment committees, seeing boredom as our personal failure. Instead, we should respond flatly with, "Something to do is right around the corner," refusing to rescue them from this valuable state. One mother discovered a valuable approach to balancing her daughter's schedule by categorizing days as either arousing, A, or calming, C. After noticing that her daughter would melt down during stimulating family holidays, she began intentionally inserting quiet breaks into busy days. The goal isn't avoiding stimulation, but preventing overstimulation. Creating moments of Sabbath or distraction-free zones can restore balance to busy family life. Some families establish boundaries like no phones during dinner, turning down answering machines in the evening, or designating no email time after dinner. These pauses serve as punctuation in the run-on sentence of life, allowing for deeper connection and modeling relaxation for children. When we reduce our children's overscheduled lives, we make room for the powerful gift of anticipation. In our on-demand culture, we've sacrificed the joy of waiting and the passion of expectation. A child who can look forward to an event brings their imagination to it, creating mental pictures and layering meaning around the experience before it even happens. When asked to describe motherhood in one word, Anne-Marie chose worry, a sentiment that resonates with many parents. While concern is woven into parenting from our children's first vulnerable days, when worry dominates our experience, something is out of balance. Just a generation ago, Anne-Marie's own mother didn't experience this level of anxiety raising 8 children. Today, our fears for our children have eclipsed our hopes and trust. By creating filters that prevent children's worlds from being flooded with adult information and anxieties, we allow them to breathe easier and develop at their own pace. Imagine your spouse's brother Andy moving in, entertaining but monopolizing your children's attention. They spend hours with him daily instead of playing outside or reading. He shares inappropriate stories, constantly introduces them to new toys they suddenly need, and dominates family meals. The twist? Andy isn't a person, but a television, a black hole of a houseguest that consumes family time and undermines simplification efforts. For children under 7, Payne strongly recommends eliminating television entirely because its negative effects outweigh benefits. The initial withdrawal period typically lasts 2 to 3 weeks, after which children develop alternative activities. Most parents find managing without television easier than constantly monitoring screen time. For families unable to eliminate television completely, moving screens out of children's bedrooms and communal spaces helps center family life around shared activities rather than screens. A child's security forms a base camp that serves them throughout life. During the first 3 years, when a baby's brain forms quadrillions of neural connections, parents provide essential security and connection. Parents act as filters, screening out overwhelming sensory input while the hippocampus develops. Children with secure attachments experience less stress, regulate emotions better, and learn more effectively. This secure base camp allows children to develop independence while having a safe place to return to. Most American parents, 76%, believe raising children today is a lot harder than when they grew up. Despite statistics showing child abductions haven't increased in 20 years, media sensationalism has amplified parental fears. Parents who constantly consume alarming media nurse on anxiety and fear, which pollutes family well-being and teaches children to see danger before possibility. The author offers a simple yet powerful way to reduce parental over-involvement: talk less. Parents often drown children in constant commentary, thinking they're showing attentiveness, when actually they're filling space with words rather than truly noticing. When a parent narrates everything a child does, sports casting, over-explains, or turns every moment into a teaching opportunity, they leave little room for the child's own thoughts and creativity. Children and adults naturally inhabit separate social worlds, even when sharing the same physical space. Despite children's curiosity, they need clear conversational boundaries to feel secure. Many parents flashbulb children with too much adult information and concerns, mistaking full disclosure for honesty. Yet children need adults to demonstrate self-restraint and confidence in handling the adult world so they can develop their own inner voice. Words have tremendous power to inspire or wound, especially within families. The threefold filter, asking if what we're about to say is true, kind, and necessary, provides a valuable framework for more conscious speech. When parents say less, children listen more. Many parents take their children's emotional temperature multiple times daily, expecting complex awareness and vocabulary about feelings. This monitoring pushes children into premature adolescence. Children under 9 have feelings, but experience them unconsciously and undifferentiated. When asked how they feel, most honestly answer, bad. Emotional intelligence develops gradually with identity formation and life experience, not through parental probing. Contrary to our culture's equation of choice with freedom, too many choices can overwhelm children. When choices are reduced, pressure lifts, allowing children time to forge identities beyond preferences or purchases. Choice overload makes decisions difficult and raises expectations. The constant question becomes, what's next? With less, children discover what truly speaks to them. When parents limit what they don't want, they clarify what they truly need and value. As the noise of popular culture, competition, and consumerism diminishes, a family can tune in to their own values. A family center emerges and strengthens, allowing more consistent discipline. When parents provide clear direction rather than endless requests, children respond better. Simplification doesn't guarantee perfect parenting or perfect children. Life remains unpredictable. But from a stable center, challenges become less threatening. Most importantly, when you rescue your children from stress by simplifying their lives, they inevitably rescue you right back by reconnecting you with your less stressed, more carefree self. Their joy and infectious enthusiasm remind us to lighten up. The journey begins with a single, doable step toward the larger changes you envision.